What I'm going to talk about today is the immunoepidemiological modeling of HIV transmission dynamics. And these are all my co-authors and advisors who are helping me through this project, since this is part of my PhD research. Nothing shady is going on. And the objective. What I'm going to do for this project is that I am building two scale model and connect these two layers to give a better presentation of what is going on in HIV transmission in the population. So I am building a model of within host, building a within host model of the HIV dynamics, and also the epidemiological model of HIV transmission in the population. And the, at the very last level, I will connect these two layers by making the transmission rate of the HIV infection a function of the viral load and CD4 counts of person at any point of time in the duration of the disease. To give a really review of the background of the HIV, this is a lentivirus, a subgroup of the retrovirus that replicates really fast, and this is the mistake prone. So we see mutations in HIV in lots of cases. The primary target of the HIV are immune cells, the basically helper T cells, macrophages, and dendritic cells. If HIV goes on over time, it causes the acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, which we know it as AIDS, and it lets all of the co-infections happen through with the HIV and AIDS. And one of the most common co-infection because of the HIV is the TB in all over the world. As you know, the transmission happens through the blood transfusion, vaginal fluid, or breast milk. And if patients go, HIV positive patients don't get treatment, they will die after 9 to 11 years after getting infected. A brief review of the epidemiology of the disease. Currently, there are 35 million who are living with the HIV. And we are seeing the increase in the number of years that HIV positive people are living because of the antiretroviral treatments that have been available over years. As I told you, there are treatments available for the HIV. The first treatment of HIV introduced in 1987. And after that, scientists and clinicians started to offer the combination of the antiretroviral therapy, because as I told you, HIV replicates really fast, and if we treat people with only one class of the treatment, we may not be able to control HIV in a way that we want. In this picture, I want to show you the different classes of treatment that are available. The first class is the entry inhibitor that doesn't let the HIV virus enter to the immune cell. In this case, I'm talking about CD4 cells. The other class of treatment that are available are the reverse transcriptase inhibitor that doesn't let the HIV RNA reverse transcript itself and produce the DNA. The other class of treatment that is available is the integrase inhibitor that doesn't let the DNA to integrate itself to the DNA of the immune cell. And the other class of the treatment that is available is protease inhibitor that doesn't let the produced viruses become mature, infectious, and infect other immune cells. So these are the four class of treatment that are available, but the reverse transcriptase inhibitor and protease inhibitor are the classes that are mostly used as a combinational antiretroviral therapy. In the middle and low-income countries, the coverage of the antiretroviral treatment are not that high, and as an average, it's about 36% currently. So I told you that because of the treatments that are available, people who are HIV positive can live longer than before. And we see a significant decrease in the mortality among HIV positive people. But of course, there are some risk factors associated with the HIV treatment as well. Like we see the drug resistance, treatment fatigue among HIV positive patients, drug toxicity, adherence issues, and mostly in low and middle income countries, we have high costs and low access and sometimes the lifestyle issues. And different studies during these years shows that a range between 6 to 51% of HIV-positive patients may interrupt their treatment in the duration of their life. And they reported different reasons for that, like they forget to take the treatment, they were traveling, they were experiencing some adverse effects, they didn't have access to the treatment, or they didn't have confidence on the effect of the pills. And in lots of cases, because they were on treatment, they were feeling good, so they thought that, okay, we're good, and they stopped treatment. So since HIV-positive patients are experiencing adverse effects of treatment fatigue, in 2000, clinicians started to recommend the periodic treatment interruption to let the patients go off treatment for a while and then come back to the treatment after a while. They were suggesting that to control the adverse effects of the antiretroviral treatment and also to kind of fight with the mutated HIV virus and let the wild type of HIV emerge and also improve the drug adherence for the patients. But of course there are risks associated with that. If patients stop getting treatment, we see viral rebound and increase the person-to-person transmission because we have the viral rebound. And also the risk of opportunistic co-infections. So they started to run different clinical trials. One of the first of them was in 2003 that they put patient one week on treatment, 1 week off treatment, and they saw that patients are experiencing more mortality because of the development of the disease. In 2006, there was a really large study that they put patients on and off treatment based on their CD4 counts. And they cut the study short because of the increase in the mortality among the HIV-positive people. But in 2009, that was a kind of recent study that they changed the threshold for putting patients on and off treatment. And what they came up with was that in the long term, there is no difference between putting people on periodic treatment interruption or having them on continuous HIV treatment. So we see different studies with conflicting results that show that we don't know what happens when we put people off treatment exactly. So, as I told you, there is no good explanation of the clinical differences in the different studies that we saw. So, we want to suggest new method to understand that what is happening when patients go on treatment interruption. And this is mathematical models. This is the less expensive method that we don't put patients on the danger of the clinical trials and unknown thresholds that we may, because of expert opinions, we define it, but we are not completely sure that this is the best threshold for them or not. And then we can offer the optimized duration of the treatment interruption and then go through the clinical trials. So for attacking this problem, I told you that I am defining two layers of the model, which is the immunoepidemiological model that combine the effect of the immunological dynamics at the individual level and epidemiological dynamics at the population level. So I'll build the immunology model, the epidemiology model, and then connect them to each other. Currently, there are really good studies on the immunology and epidemiology, but there are not that many studies available that try to find the relation, the effect of the immunological level models to the epidemiology. So I will start with the Wittenhoff model of the HIV viral dynamics. As you can see in this conceptual model, for now I'm focusing on the CD4 counts as a main target of the HIV virus. So uninfected cells are going to get infected by the infectious virus. And when they get infected, they will move to the infected CD4 count population. And the infected cells will produce the viruses. A proportion of them are non-infectious, and another proportion of them are infectious. If we add, I told you that there are two classes of treatment that are combined together, and mostly patients use them. If we add reverse transcriptase inhibitor, we decrease the infectivity rate of the virus, so we have less flow from uninfected cells to the infected cells. And if we add the protease inhibitor, we will decrease the proportion of the infectious viruses, so we will have less infected viruses as well. These arrows show the death rate and clearance rate for the cells and the viruses, and we also have the birth rate for them. And for this model, we use the ordinary differential equations to attack this problem. So you can see this is the model. These are the equations that we use for the immune modeling of HIV. We have the birth rate, and we have the infectivity rate for the HIV that move the uninfected cells to the infected cells population. And we have the death rate for the uninfected cells. We have the death rate for the infected cells, and the infected viruses are going to produce, infected cells are going to produce viruses with the rate of P. Also, we define the clearance rate for the viruses as well. And this model has been introduced like 20 years ago and has been validated with the real data from real patients. So we add treatment. The two classes of treatment, reverse transcriptase inhibitor, as I told you, is decreasing the infectivity rate of the virus, and also protease inhibitor that decreases the infectious viruses. So this is basically how we will build a model from the immune level. For the between host model of HIV transmission in the population, we will use network modeling. And the reason for that is that for each person in the population, we will build the immune model for that patient. And depends on when that patient is getting infected, the viral load and CD4 counts would be different, so the transmissibility of that person would be different. So we will define the people in the population based on their sex, their age, number of partnerships that they have in the population, and some characteristics that affect the treatment interruption in the population. Different studies show that time to heart initiation after HIV transmission effect is considered as a risk factor for the treatment interruption. The earlier patients start their treatment, there is a higher chance that they interrupt their treatment. And also people who are co-infected with other diseases are more probable to interrupt their treatment. So we add these characteristics for each patient in the network, people in the population in the network. Also, we add the partnership, and we define two different forms of the partnership, spousal and non-spousal, and the difference between them is that non-spousal partnerships are shorter and the spousal partnership are longer. In the population that we study is only we consider the heterosexual partnership, and also chance of HIV transmission from male to female is exactly the same as chance of transmission from male female to male. And for this specific network, we use exponential family random graph models, because these kinds of model is a really good representation of the social network, because social networks are not randomly connected. They are more clustered than random network, and ERG can get these characteristics of the social networks better. And we also define two network statistics for this model that we are building: the total number of partnerships in the population, and also number of people who are in one partnership or in the concurrent partnership with two partners. Going back to the result, going to the results that we got for the within host model, as I told you that we built a model for the HIV and the CD4 counts interaction. This is how the model looks like for the uninfected T cells and also for the viral load. You see here we have the acute stage of the HIV that we see sudden decrease in the CD4 count, and then we will go to the chronic stage of the disease. Also for the viral load we have the same thing. We have the sudden increase in the number of the viruses, and then we will reach the chronic stage of the disease. In this model we don't show the AIDS stage, we only model until the chronic stage, and we will study the treatment effects on the chronic stage. So here I wanted to show you how adding treatment would affect the CD4 count and also viral load. If patients are on the treatment, the viral load goes really down, that it is not detectable anymore. But what happens when we put people on the treatment interruption period? First, I defined 200 days treatment interruption after patients reach the steady state or the chronic stage of the disease. The 200 days interruption showed me that once we put people, the gray areas are the interruption period. When we put patients off treatment, we see decrease on the CD4 counts and increase in the viral load. Once we put patients on the treatment, we see increase in the CD4 and decrease in the viral load. But we studied different periods of the treatment interruption to see how it may affect the viral load and CD4 counts, and if there is any optimized duration of the interruption that we can recommend to the patient. Here it shows the 100 days interruption period, and the reason that we chose that was that one of the definitions that clinicians use that say that patient is interrupted the treatment is the 3 month period. If patients don't refill their treatment after 3 months, they call them they are on treatment. They interrupted their treatment. And as you can see here, that during the treatment interruption, we see increase in the viral load. The other duration that we chose was 30 days, 1 month interruption. And what we see is that we see continuous increase in the viral load, although they are on and off treatment, but we didn't, it doesn't affect the CD4 counts. But at the very end point of the simulation, which is after about 4 years, we see sudden collapse in the CD4 count, that we need to study that more. Another threshold that I defined for the simulation was that other than defining constant on and off treatment, we can define the threshold. If patients go under 500 cell counts per microliter, we put them on treatment, and if they reach the 700 CD4 counts per microliter, we put them off treatment. And what we see was that these thresholds caused the repeated kind of continuous action over time, and we don't see those sudden changes over time because of constant period of on and off treatment. Another observation that was interesting for me was that when we put patients on and off treatment based on the CD4 count threshold, the duration that patients are on treatment should be longer than the duration that we put patient off treatment. So it shows that it takes longer for the CD4 counts to recover itself and clear the viruses over time for the constant threshold that we define for the CD4 counts. The results of the between host model, this is the ongoing project that we just fed the data that we had from the heterogeneous population to the model, and currently we are adding the disease and also interruption to this model. So in a summary, we can say that HIV-positive patients may interrupt their treatment over the period of their disease because of different reasons. And currently, we don't know exactly the clinically what has happened when patients are off treatment. So we will suggest the mathematical models as an option to decrease the cost and also come up with the optimized period of the treatment interruption to help the patients who are going off treatment provide them better care if they may go to treatment interruption because of different reasons, treatment fatigue or other different reasons. If you go to any talk of the modelers, they come up with this quote that all models are wrong, but some of them are really useful, and during all these years, they provided useful prediction and information for the decision makers based on the result that they got. But specifically, the limitation of this study was that the immune system, you know, that it is not only CD4 counts, we have lots of CTLs, macrophages, and dendritic cells specifically for the HIV that was not considered on this model. We are adding the macrophages to simulate the AIDS stage 2. And also, we only studied the treatment interruption during the chronic stage of the disease and not acute stage or AIDS stage. And as I don't know if you mentioned it or not, the treatment that we put patients on this model was caused the complete recovery of CD4 counts, which is not happening in the real HIV patients that we are modifying the model to address that issue too. And for the next steps, as I told you, what we are doing is that we are adding the effects of other immune cells and also validate our model with the data of the real patients in the real world, if there was any experiments on that. And then on the population level, we are adding the what you see, this is a really short sample of the how disease is going to get transmitted in the population, and the red dots are the infected patients, and it shows the dynamics of the population over time, how they change their partnership and how people get infected over time. This is what we're trying to build on the next stage. And at the very last stage, we use the within host model that we are building as an input for the between host model transmission rate, and then provide the more accurate representation of the HIV transmission in the population. So I just want to say thank you for Dr. Chupe. She's from the mathematical department at Virginia Tech. She's helping me with the between host modeling. At Dr. Jessica Conway that helped me with the idea of the treatment interruption and the lack of knowledge that we have on that area. And thank you for your time.